This is Critical Nonsense, our high lowbrow show about culture, science, and tech. This week, Aaron asks Joey about emotions taking over, and Joey asks Aaron about airport culture.
Oh, hi.
Oh.
It's me, Joey.
Hey, is this what an, this is what an Aaron sounds like.
And this is what an executive producer and Pixar character, Jess Vander, sounds like.
Hi, this is Jess.
What does a Joey sound like? It's important for people to know.
This is what a Joey sounds
okay,
like.
Just clarifying.
I like that even the primer of your question ties back to Beyonce.
Always.
And the emotions are just taking you over.
I mean, literally. Also, that version of the song is better. Fight me.
What song?
In the words of the brokenhearted, it's just emotions taking me over. I wanted to do this, you know, like slow jam the news version.
Yeah. It's spoken true. Word.
Yeah. So. I have a question, and I'm gonna tap dance around spoilers because it is also related to
Beyonce.
The Lion
it's
King.
Not, but maybe. Oh, it is.
It is. It oh. is. So, you know, I, as you just heard Jess say at the top of the show, I've been thinking a lot about emotion, the expression of emotion,
how it takes you over.
How it takes you over. And the repression of emotion and like holding back emotion. And again, I'm trying to tap dance around spoilers, but emotion is a critical part of The Lion King. I don't think that's...
If you haven't seen The Lion King, yeah, like it's like 25 years old now.
Yeah. Get thee to a
Do we still have to worry about spoilers like 25 years later?
Well, for the new...
Citizen Kane, it's the sled.
So offended. Which
Rosebud. I haven't even seen it, and I know it's a sled.
Yeah,
because someone spoiled it for me. I'm spreading the joy.
Bastard.
Simba.
Simba, yeah. Well, I guess it is fair to say that a critique has been about the way that emotion shows up in the film. Mm. I think that's enough.
That's
to
not
out
a
there.
Spoiler.
You're talking about the latest remake. Let's clarify.
Let us clarify. Yes. Jon Favreau's.
Well, I'm
take.
Assuming everyone listening to this is living in 2019.
So, fair
there
assumption.
Are two versions. I'm just making sure that everyone knows about which version we are referring.
This is true.
The Beyonce version.
The Queen version. By the way,
but what's the critique as it relates to emotions?
Well, that's where I can't actually say it too much because then it gets into a thing and I can't spoil anything. This is a real long preamble about spoilers, but I'm very sensitive to not having my non-existent Twitter account blamed.
Is it just like Beyonce doesn't have emotions?
I'm not going to answer these questions. Go see the movie and then we can talk about it. But this goes to the question that I have been struggling with, which is all about the expression of emotions. When you should express them, when you shouldn't express them. And really at the end of the day, when is communicating emotion bad for your health?
Caveat, I think it's okay to say in the latest remake of The Lion King, there has been some backlash about the feelings and the way that they are expressed in the film. Okay, let us commence.
Oh no, it's spoiled!
Ooh, apples! Sorry, because apples can spoil. That didn't
Yeah,
make sense.
Gregor Mendel. There's flies growing on that spoiled meat.
Punnett squares!
And this has been Nerd Corner. When are, you know, I feel like I have a position on this type of subject that I don't feel like is necessarily universal or the norm. I feel like my position on emotions is a little bit, like I'm a very emotional person, but I also like the culture that I grew up in, I think has a slightly different attitude around emotions, like growing up, like my mother, I remember I called her at one point in grad school, like a woman had a seizure. I was like working and at grad school in like a new domain area that I knew nothing about. I had slept like 2 hours. A woman had a seizure in class. I responded in the moment and like helped settle things down. And I got home and I just sort of like broke down crying. And I called my mom and my mom was like, take a nap. She's like, I'm at work, go to sleep. bye. And then I was like, all right, love you, mean it. But like that idea of like, she never sort of, like she never diminished emotions, or, and my father didn't either, but it was also like this too shall pass sort of attitude. And like in evaluating other people's emotions, like my wife is the same way. She's like, great, you're feeling that. Like, you know, can we move on to something else now? And so my attitude around emotions is like embrace it, right? Like you can't stop feeling a thing just because you will it to, but also, you know, that they're not the most important thing. And like this too shall pass has sort of been my approach to everything.
I mean, it is like a fundamental puritanical value to suppress your emotions. Yeah. So it's not just like an individual character trait. Like that's how, that is like a fundamental tenet of quote civilization.
Yeah.
Is like the control of emotion and not letting your savage beast quote like come out.
Your id.
Your id. We can talk about Freud all day. but yes, like keeping that in check and really holding on to those things is something that is like, that is the baseline. And so tangling with those emotions and figuring out what we do with them is really, really difficult. And mm-hmm. like, you know, I was just telling you a story right before we recorded this. When I was a little kid, my parents got divorced. I went to like a group church thing that was all about helping a bunch of kids get over or work through, not get over, work through divorce. And I still remember to this day making a little paper cone doll of a person with a styrofoam head and then filling it with baking soda and vinegar and then the little head popping off.
Mm-hmm.
And that being a lesson to all of us kids that you can't let your, you cannot hold your emotions in. If you hold all of your emotions in, they're going to come out at times that you can't control them and in ways that you can't control.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a really early and really visceral lesson to me in you have to find a way to let your emotions out or else they're going to eat you alive.
Mm-hmm.
What I do think is tricky, though, is that that's kind of, to me, like that's taken over our philosophy as an entire, as a culture, that actually getting every emotion out and not mediating them and assuming that they all have equal validity and importance to everyone else in every circumstance is expected. Like, it's not just okay. It's like, you have to do it.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I think it's really important to sort of analyze your own emotions to your point of, like, not letting things eat you alive and sort of being aware of why you're feeling a thing. Like, what is the thing? Like, putting a name to the emotion that you're feeling.
Mm.
And then trying to understand why you feel that particular emotion. But this line that you're talking about, right, where that there is a responsibility on others to then act on your emotions is, I think, where I sort of like fall off, right?
Mm-hmm,
like,
mm-hmm.
I think your emotions to a situation are valid, but you have the responsibility to control your environment and do what you will, you know, barring your like someone else is harming you or anything like that. Like, you have a responsibility to choose to either, like, if someone's making you feel shitty, like, cut them out of your life, or if someone's making you feel good, like, bring them closer in. But that response, you're sort of in control, or you're the, you know, the person that needs to kind of take action, versus if I'm feeling a thing, like, you make me feel a thing that, like, I can't make you change your behavior. I have a responsibility then to, like, create distance or whatever.
Yeah. I feel as though the abdication of that responsibility or that control is where the negative impacts on your health can actually occur.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you allow yourself to just essentially give in to each and every emotional thought, whim, feeling, and expect the entire world to mediate its responses, you're in for a world of hurt. You're in for a bad time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Within psychology, it fits with this idea of the locus of control, of whether the locus of control is like inside of you or outside of you. And that idea, I think that, you know, I almost don't want to bring it up because I feel like it gets abused and misused for political reasons. But this concept of victim culture, victim identity, or those types of things, that really boils down to, like, is your locus of control inside or outside of you, in absence of however, like, anyone is talking about it in the media. And so, like, if you are simply a passive vessel where things happen to you and the world needs to change in order for you to feel good or bad, versus you being able to change the world around you, I think that's what it boils down to. And there is some of this within kind of outrage culture on social media and things like that, where, like, a thing happens in the world and then people are very upset about it. And often for valid reasons, potentially, right? Like, it is in conflict with their personal value system or whatever it is. But then the question is, what do you do about it? Like, simply being mad doesn't make the world change. I mean, although, like, I guess within social media, like, occasionally,
yeah,
just being mad, if enough people are mad.
I mean, I'll get my flight on Delta for free, most likely, if I am mad in the right direction. Don't know for sure. But it, there's a mantra that I don't know, like, has been popping up for a while now, but it's this mantra of feelings aren't facts.
Yeah.
And the context that I keep on hearing it in is in self-care conversations, where it's a reminder that just because you feel something doesn't mean that it's true, and you have the control and agency to not only react to it in a more beneficial way to yourself, but also to be able to navigate the way that other people might react to your reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it powerful. I find it a little bit philosophical, but I do think that there's an extreme version in which it goes to exactly what you're saying, where we need to pay attention when we start communicating all of our feelings as true as factual as evidence-based information.
Right. Well, that's the thing, like, and that's where that sort of, like, concept of freedom and other people's freedom starts to come into things, because feelings are fundamentally subjective. It is about, like, how are you feeling about the environment around you and, like, all of the stimuli and everything else. But the question is, if I'm not hurting you, or, I mean, if I'm not, like, hurting, in quotes, right, anybody, like, I should also have equivalent freedom to, like, go about my life and feel the things that I feel. But this idea of feelings are facts starts to say, like, I feel a way, so you have to change, right? Like, my feeling is valid, so you are invalid.
Yeah. And, I mean, invalidation hurts.
Yeah.
I think that's, like, and not just, like, hurts painfully, but, like, slows down change is a bellwether to growth.
Mm-hmm.
And so robbing social groups of that is, like, that is also a fact of that behavior. Like, that is now a responsibility that you have to be aware that, right, you are now wielding.
There is, like, a question of the pendulum swing too, right? Mm-hmm. Like, right now, a lot of that outrage culture online and this sort of concept of people collectively getting mad at things and trying to change behaviors of individuals, of companies, of whatever it is being directed in things, at least, that sort of often fit with my value system, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, justice for groups of people and equivalent treatment and equal rights and, you know, environmental causes and things like that. But at the same time, you can see how it is a slippery slope of where that idea of, like, we're all upset, so we're sort of shutting down people with different opinions can go too far. And it feels like it's one of those things that, like, right now it's had some massive positive impacts. You know, Black Lives Matter, the Me Too movement, other things that I'm probably not even thinking of right now. But if that becomes the norm, that sort of mob mentality of, you know, what happens when it's not something as significant as that, right? Like, we just didn't like your album, or we, you know, we didn't like your movie or other piece of art, or we don't like the way you look or act, right? Like, you can easily see how that sort of concept of our emotions matter and you need to change can go too far.
Well, To me, that is the difference between having an opinion about a thing, which everyone can have, and having a feeling about a thing, which everyone does have. Mm. And I don't know if it's that almost sounds separate to me of when we force our opinions on other people, which is almost certainly not ideal, versus sharing our opinion, or even better, sharing our emotions, which seems almost always positive.
Yeah. There's definitely a thing in, I want to say in mediation, like training, which is always about I statements and making sure that whenever you share a thought, like an opinion, not even an opinion, but a feeling, you don't say you made me feel this way. It's I felt this way.
Yeah.
When you did this, so that you're taking ownership over your feelings and you're recognizing that they are my feelings, not yours. And I cannot put expectation on you to react to the way that I felt, regardless of whether you knew that I would feel that way or not. And I do think that that's interesting, that there is a distinction between opinion and feeling, and that we have a responsibility for both, but everybody feels things.
Yeah. I mean, so I took a class in college called Motivation and Emotion, and it was like fundamentally dealing with like instinctive and like neurological pathways for those concepts. But basically every feeling that you have, at least within this school of thought, boils down to some sort of drive or motivation, right? Like the feeling when you're feeling upset, it's because your drive to achieve maybe social acceptance or a sense of community is being stilted or impeded or whatever, right? Like if you say something mean to me right now, we all have, I mean, differing degrees of desire to feel connected in a community and to be appreciated and things like that, because we're social animals. And so if my need for social acceptance is high, I'm probably more likely to be upset when you do that. And it's still towards this drive for acceptance. In the same way, the feeling of hunger is around your drive to eat. Like you need to sustain the machine, or, you know, like, it still fits with sex and all these other things. And so oftentimes when someone is feeling anything, it's still boiling back to some need not being met, some sort of innate drive that's not being satisfied. And I think when you start to boil it down to things like that, of especially like within the Me Too movement as like an example, or Black Lives Matter also is an example, right? Like it is this outpouring or like spilling over of a feeling of inequality or injustice, because your drive to feel accepted by the society around you is being impeded by systemic racism or systemic sexism or these ideas. And so that thing is being impeded, and that's why it's spilling over. And in those instances, right, like it is good to express those things. But
right. So if what you're saying is, people, we all communicate our feelings because it's because we need something. In that case, does that mean we think it's almost always good to share what we're feeling because that fulfilling that need might be good for our health?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I fundamentally agree with it. It's interesting because the question that this started with is, when is it bad for your health? But really, I think it's like, how do you... This has shifted the question to be, I think, something that's more productive, which is, how do you communicate in a way that is productive for you and those around you?
Yeah, how do you ask
emotions?
How do you ask for what you need? I think that's the thing, too. And like, if I need something from you and I communicate it to you and you don't want to give it, like, I can't like force you to do it, right? But I can say, and that's like a conversation that comes up in some of the literature that I've read around workplace, is like, ask for what you need, and hopefully the environment can give it to you. And if a workplace or a relationship or whatever can't, if you are clear about what you need and ask for what you need and it can't give it to you, then you're in control again, tying back and move on.
It's interesting to think of feelings not as facts, but as wayfinding posts for yourself. Help you find what you might need.
Yeah. So sounds like what originally began as a Lion King conversation has since devolved into us having many feelings, those being really just outcries for stuff that we need, and demanding others to give us that thing is not always going to happen, but at least sharing how we feel, that could be good.
Spot on!
We need more from Beyonce, and she's just not giving it to us.
Accurate.
But we love you.
Accurate. Hello, papaya. Hello, papaya, 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 papaya,
papaya.
Papaya, papaya,
papaya, papaya.
How do you cleanse your palate?
Papaya.
Oh, papaya, papaya.
Papaya, papaya.
Now we have our musical intro.
Yay, we did it.
That's going in 100%. And we're here again now with our palate cleansed, a little papaya with some mint.
Hello,
people. Aaron.
Joey.
I just came in on a red eye last night.
This morning.
This morning.
Like 4 hours ago.
I was on a travel ban.
Mm.
Post baby, mm-hmm. self-induced, mm-hmm. or wife-induced. Mm-hmm. And that travel ban has ended.
I see.
In the past month or so, and I've been doing quite a bit more travel. A lot of hiccups and headaches in airports, layovers, storms, heat domes. Yeah.
Climate change is real. It is happening.
Yeah. And, you know, I had traveled a lot. I had Delta status. I'm a sky priority.
It's very country. I went to Texas.
I'm sky priority. So
What are you talking about?
Are you a sky ranger? Sky
priority. I'm a sky
priority.
I have Delta sky priority. I only bring that up to say, like, you have to be in the airport a lot to get that status, if you want to call it. It makes you feel better about wasting your time in airports. But it'd been a while since I was in that world that I'd sort of just taken for granted a little bit. And being back in airports again is, like, you know, triggering maybe on one end of things. But it's like when you come back to an environment that you haven't been in a while, all of a sudden you're much more aware of things that you weren't paying attention to, of how people are behaving and what are the rules again, and reminding yourself of sort of the mores and the social constructs and the ways that we behave in that particular environment, which oftentimes I think brings out the worst in us, maybe. And I've been thinking a lot about, what is the culture of airports?
I'm going to respond to your question. I don't know where this voice
came
from.
Talk amongst yourselves.
Neither a road nor an island. Just to clarify my quick response, is that I have recently moved into this world of status, as you put it.
Status.
On the airline, I flew first class.
Good for y'all. Next.
You're canceled.
Accurate.
We made Jess feel emotions.
Yes. And now we need to be responsible for them. It's true. No. But yeah, I think, like, literally recently, I now use Clear. I signed up for that. Who knows who owns my data, but that's a whole different thing. My branch now has status on Delta. So he always gives me his first class seats whenever we fly together, because we both don't get upgraded. So I have
that's
flown.
Love.
It really is. He had somebody puke on his foot yesterday on the way back from the Virgin Islands, but that's a whole other story. Don't eat the nachos in the USVI airport, just so you know. The culture of airports is geared toward, like, old school, not old school, but like businessmen.
Businessmen.
Dude, where is my great food? I want a lounge. I've got a briefcase. It's got numbers for locks on it. Like, it's just
Samsonite.
Yeah. And they're like, they're very aware that this Samsonite culture is, like, drenching airports. And I think a lot of newer airports that are, like, investing in them are trying to break that. And they're trying to bring the rest of the communities that surround the airport into them.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to give some evidence of why we say it this way.
Yeah.
So what you're saying, Aaron, sort of fits with where my question was originally starting. And I think I put it in our chat, you know, if you're traveling a lot, you're sort of primed for efficiency. Like, you just want to get through there. If you're in the airport several times a month, you're just like, all right, like, let's move on. I don't want to be here. I'm back again. It's not fun. You're losing a lot of your freedoms in an airport and you just want to be in and out. Most people in the airport are not in that mentality, right? Like, they don't travel that often. A lot of the people, and I don't know what the percentages are of like business travelers versus recreational travelers at any given moment in an airport, but it feels pretty heavily oriented towards tourism and things like that, which is great. But it's almost like when you're in the airport all the time, you're like a race car driver. You know exactly what to do. You're, you know, built for speed. And then everyone else on the road is like a 16-year-old that just got their license and doesn't really know what they're doing. And you're, you know, like, you're in the line and someone's like forgets their belt and leaves their shoe, you know, like, I have pre-check, so I don't have to deal with that as much. Like, most of the people who get pre-check. Yeah. Most people have pre-check are sort of like traveling often. But like, you know, you're in that environment. But then I started being like, what is the airport like? And I looked up some articles about it and things like that. And there's this anthropologist called Mark Auge. Mm-hmm. Auge? He's French. Mm. I don't know.
Mm.
A-U-G-E. And he has this concept of non-places. And he says the airport is a non-place because you're not trying to be yourself. It is like a space in between spaces. Like, I'm not trying to be at the airport. As Jess said earlier, like, I don't go to the airport. I'm like, this, you know, this week I went to San Francisco for work. I was going from my home or my work to a different workplace. And the airport was just some place in between that like existed in the ether. And that like sort of blew my mind. Like, how, like, I don't really think about airports as like places I want to be. I'm like trying to get through there as fast as I can. And so it's a lot more similar to the highway than it is like a home or, you know, a social space.
Yeah, an airport is not a destination. It is part of the vehicle of a plane.
It's an extension of the wings and wheels.
Yeah, and it also takes, it makes us think of the time we have to get to there, right? Like, flying is actually the drive to the airport, mm-hmm. waiting at the airport, then being on the plane, and then the inverse of the first two things.
Yeah. I mean, the Port Authority of any, you know, metropolitan area that's dealing with their airport struggles with this like crazy.
Smells bad.
Smells bad?
Yeah, the Port Authority smells bad just wherever.
I was going to try to do a foghorn, but I'm not going to do that. But they're like, they try to, it's basically just like with any other environment that is trying to generate revenue. They're, of course, earning money through leasing the gates that they have mm-hmm. at the airport, but they all from the airlines. But they're also trying to generate revenue through the stores, through the restaurants, and they're trying to increase the time that people want to spend at airports. And there's going to always be the fundamental challenge of the customers that spend the most money on airplanes or on flights are the ones who are trying to get through this shit the fastest.
Yeah.
They are trying to not spend. They are trying to show up and like get as close to when that boarding
yeah,
door
that is me.
Gate
I
has
was
to close.
The last person on my flight to San Francisco. I cut it real close.
Yeah, and actually, it reminds me when you were saying earlier, we don't know the actual partition of who is spending the most on flights or who, what type of passenger is flying the most. I think I'll have to dig it up from somewhere, but there was a report released somewhere about the number of business flights that Apple was paying for their employees to go to China. And it was just like most of the flights are just business employees. Yeah. And in that sense, it's not even the passengers who are paying for that travel.
Exactly.
It is a company that's paying for that travel.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I mean, one of the questions that you asked, Jess, were what are the thing, like, what are the evident pieces of evidence that the airport is designed for this? The weirdest thing for me in every airport is the shoeshine station.
Yes.
Every time I see it, and every time there is someone in the shoeshine station, there's someone getting their shoes shined.
Shocking.
It's so weird to me. I'm like, I mean, it's weird for many reasons. One
spit
is it
shine my shoes.
I'm doing sound effects. I'm that guy from that movie.
Police Academy.
Thank you. Oh, you saved me. But I'm for many reasons, it shocks me. One is that even when I travel for work, I am not traveling with shoes that need to be shined. That's not the type of work that we do. And then the second is that it feels as though, and it, I think the people that are most obvious in airports are the ones who seem to be traveling for leisure because they're walking more slowly. They're like an entire family that's walking across the concourse.
They're in athleisure.
Always in athleisure. I have started taking on that mantle myself. Though,
or team shirts.
Oh, the team shirts. Yes. Ooh. Yeah.
But can I just say, and this is a point of pride for not only me, but for people in my nuclear family, is our skill at navigating airport security.
Nice.
And wearing team shirts.
No, we avoid team shirts.
Yeah, that's more Gretchen. So.
Yeah.
But the reason that I think is a skill is that it requires you to identify with maybe excessive stereotyping, but looking at mm-hmm. what a person looks like, how they are handling mm-hmm. what is otherwise or could be a very lengthy process, and you need to decide instantly, that person's going to take longer. I must go into line three.
Yes.
Because that person has clearly four different devices that they're pulling out of distinct bags, and I can't possibly wait behind that.
Yes, yeah. And they're always doing it right before the x-ray, and you're like...
All of a sudden, you're like, why?
Why then? Why then? This has always been the way that it is.
Why did you wear those shoes? Terrible mistake.
The interesting thing I've also uncovered going down this whole... Because I was thinking about this yesterday, so I have... status on Delta, but I got to the gate after people were already loading and they'd already called other zones, and so I just got in the regular line and wasn't trying to cut anybody. I was just like, we're all going to the same place. I got in line. Another gentleman in a suit mm-hmm. was like, I have status, and like they'd already closed the sky priority like first class lane, and he walked right up to the front of it and was like, I'm going in. At the same time, a woman came up next to me, and like there's clearly a line behind me, and she was just trying to like cut in front of me, just to, like merge into the lane. And I was like, there's so many like different cultural models that are happening here. This guy thinks he's more important. This woman seemed like she was, I heard her speaking. I don't think she was like American. She had a fairly thick accent. And like her cultural model was like, this is how you do lines. You just kind of like slide in together and merge in. And I was like, does national culture and all of these things matter? And apparently there's this big study conducted. Have you ever heard of Hofstede? It's actually a guy, but there's a website that allows you to like analyze cultures of different nations around the world on like six spectrums. And they did an analysis of, it's like Hofstede. They did an analysis of airports based on national cultures and what people want. And like, you know, in East Asian cultures like China, it is a more collectivist culture. And so people are looking for spaces that are serving everybody. Whereas in the US, it's a more individualist culture and people are like looking for things that serve them. Their expectation is that the airport is there. You paid money, so you serve me. Mm-hmm. And so the example they were giving was like a businessman in China. If everyone's happy, but there's loud noise as well, he's doing work at the airport, might be okay with it. Whereas a businessman in the US, if everyone's being loud and disrupting his work, is going to be upset. But the way that you design airports for different cultures is actually, in theory, then quite different. Like, mm-hmm. what's the experience mm-hmm. that you should design? And, like, a heavily international airport, like, you know, the Miami airport or LAX or JFK or Heathrow or, you know, Singapore or wherever needs to accommodate far more expectations of what an airport experience should be like than, you know, I don't know, Hartford Airport.
I mean, I was going to say, comparing, for example, the Memphis, Tennessee airport to the Jewel in Singapore, which is unfair for a thousand reasons.
Basically, the same thing.
Like, the Jewel in Singapore has been invested, like, I think $1.3 billion were just put into that airport. It's got the largest indoor waterfall in the world. All top-of-the-line luxury shopping and retail experiences. Like, it is a space for people to see what Singapore is all about. And that's like very specific language. It is not necessarily for the people of Singapore, although it is because it is such a big hub mm-hmm. that they are using that moment for international people to see what Singapore is on the world stage. Mm. But also what's interesting is that Singapore is struggling right now, or not struggling, but is intentionally trying to build up what its unique culture is, because it is such a quickly growing country that has so many connections to other countries nearby.
Yeah.
So it's doing like multiple things at once. It's trying to show and create a culture of their own via this airport that can be shown off to the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting, again, in the same way, like still catering to that type of business traveler, someone who might not even step foot out beyond the airport, to the extent that an airport actually reflects the geographic location in which it's situated is really interesting. You know, Singapore is probably trying really hard to make its airport feel like Singapore.
Yes. Yeah. And only New York is, for some reason, only figuring out right now that, like, they need to do that with LaGuardia, which is a disaster right now.
But in a way, kind of reflects New York.
Yeah.
The pigeons in JFK. I miss the pigeons in JFK.
Yeah.
That was a sign that you were in New York.
Yeah. But like, there is an interesting aspect to this, too, right? Like, Singapore is interesting because, in a lot of ways, their global reputation is the rigidity of their culture, mm-hmm. like the strictness of rules and all of these things. And they're trying to promote some, like, beauty and sort of the wonderful things that can come out of Jess is just smiling.
I think would like Singapore.
same.
But if you look at, so traveling internationally, if you look at going through Germany, right, which also is a culture that's oriented around, like, there is a right way to do things, is a little bit more black and white, versus flying through Israel. Like, Germany is like, there are these straight lines that you get into and you queue up and this is how you go through.
Yep.
Israel, you literally get into a pen to get onto the plane. There's like, there's no line here. We've just designed a thing that sort of forces you guys into a bottleneck. Figure it out.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That is the process. They just like create like, literally like a pen with sides that starts to like narrow in towards where you board the plane, and they're like, push.
Yeah,
you know, like that is the vibe. And like going through customs is the same way. It's like, there's 7 booths open, figure it out.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
I mean, I love the fact that the culture of airports is impacted by where they are, but airports have to think about who's going to be there, and that's going to impact their culture.
Yeah, and not only servicing, you know, that stereotype of commercial businessmen, which maybe predominantly have been the history of who airports served, but as we start to see more and more restaurants cropping up in actual shopping centers inside of airports, or we start to see those mobile pods where new mothers can nurse their children because there aren't actually infrastructural places designed within airports to serve moms or women, which is a whole larger conversation. There's probably a lot of opportunity for airports to just be more interesting and inclusive and culturally rich places.
Ooh, can do they become places?
Yeah, places versus non-places. That's interesting.
That's the hope, right? So it's maybe what's to come, even though airport culture today is not ideal.
Yeah.
I can't imagine wanting to stay longer at an airport.
George Clooney can.
Tom Hanks.
Damn it.
Wait, they both had flight movies, though, right?
Yeah.
They did. One, he was a consultant. George Clooney was a consultant in?
Yeah.
Not the aviator.
And Tom Hanks was an immigrant living in an airport. Yeah,
I'm glad that Alex cut this off a long time ago. So that's good.
Tom Hanks. Critical Nonsense is a Sylvain Labs production.
Recorded in beautiful New York, New York, in MacGyver Studios.
As always, we'd like to thank executive producer and Tom Hanks, Jess Vander.
We'd also like to thank George Clooney and sound engineer Alex Contell.
We love Nora Mesterich for our art and for being Scarlett Johansson. No.
It's random. Fair. We also want to thank the Avengers, who are Tony Vong, Les Jacobs, and Sara Gilbert.
And as always, sorry, Lynn.
Okay. I want to thank Pink Pajamas, Penguins on the Bottom, Singapore. This has literally been coming since I was 13.
This is a special thanks and it's just been going through
Absolutely,
your head.
Because it's, if you play that with The Lion King, you'll get it. And we actually hit on all of it in the episode.
Oh my God.
I'm so excited.
We've made
Except
it.
Except for the Penguins on the Bottom, but whatever.
I would like to thank the host and bartender at the airport last night because they brought me very delicious fried chicken.
Honestly, underrated job being a bartender at the airport. Customers 24/7.
And they always have to leave. They can't stay too long. That's great. Oh, I'd like to thank, honestly, the shoeshine people at the airport because, like, that's a weird, that's got to be a tough job. That's got to be a weird job. And, like, that is a... I see you. I feel you. That's tough.
I would like to thank those who get their shoes shined at the airport because you get sat in those seats that are for some reason many feet above the ground, sort of on this strange pedestal for other people to see you getting your shoes shined. And it looks silly.
I'd like to thank Disney for making the Newsy, which maybe popularized shoe shining for pop culture.
Yeah. I would like to thank Christian Bale for being in that movie.
Yeah.
I would also like to thank my Lyft driver this morning because I got the location wrong 3 times.
Yes.
And he had to do loops.
Yeah, status for what? Am I right?
Status for what?
5:30 in the morning.
Okay.
Sure.
I'd like to thank the future inventor of a sneaker shiner because, honestly.
Yo. No, you're right. You're right.
Sneakers are, when you're right, you're are right. All over the place.
You're right.
Think about that.
I'd like to thank you, Joey, and you, Jess, for being really, really good humans that I enjoy seeing every day.
Oh my
when
God,
you're in
Aaron.
Check
like
in later
you.
And see if you still enjoy me at 2 p.m.
Bye.
Fair point. Bye.
Love you. It can't be that bad if it makes you happy.
Then why the hell are you so sad?
Wow, wow.
Okay.